Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgain. Pasco, Washington Police Sergeant Ken Latin defends the police response to the shooting of Mexican farm worker Antonio Zambrano Montes.
None of you would stand out there at 10th and Lewis Street and throw rocks at cars, and then when the police show up, throw rocks at them and then run. That's not normal, reasonable behavior.
Correspondent Anna King reports on the investigation of the shooting and reactions from Pasco residents. Also on the show, two young people in Seattle talk about how their undocumented and uncertain immigration status is affecting their plans for the future. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge on Coast Community Radio. I'm Kathleen Morgain. In Washington's Tri-Cities, more facts are emerging in the police shooting of Mexican farm worker Antonio Zambrano Montes. Investigators say none of the three Pasco officers involved in the shooting were certified Spanish speakers. Latinos in Pasco have been protesting and calling for a federal investigation. Correspondent Anna King has our story.
Pasco is a farming town, nestled snug into the confluence of the Columbia, Snake, and Yakima Rivers in southeast Washington. Onion peels flit like butterflies along the highways, and massive food processing plants occasionally stink up suburban backyards in the early morning. Many Latinos from Mexico, South America, and also from California migrated here to harvest asparagus, cherries, and apples. They've raised children, bought homes, and started businesses. Third and fourth generations have put down roots here, too. They're earning college degrees and taking leadership roles. But the shooting of a Latino man by Pasco police last week has thrust this fast-growing town into the national spotlight.
His actions were not normal.
That's Sergeant Ken Latin with the City of Kennewick's Police Department at a briefing this week. He's talking about the man who was shot, Antonio Zambrano Montes. He was 35, a farm worker, a Mexican national.
None of you would stand out there at 10th and Lewis Street and throw rocks at cars, and then when the police show up, throw rocks at them and then run. That's not normal, reasonable behavior. We just want to know why.
Kennewick is just across the Columbia River from Pasco, and its police department has been charged with investigating the shooting of Zambrano Montes by Pasco police. Several cell phone videos posted on YouTube show the shooting in grainy but graphic detail. Zambrano Montes was reportedly throwing rocks in a crowded intersection. Police showed up, tried to stop him, then tased him. Zambrano Montes ran across the intersection. Shots were fired. Then Zambrano Montes ran down a sidewalk. He turned briefly to face police, and they let off a second volley. Zambrano Montes fell onto the concrete. Reactions to these graphic videos vary. Some Pasco residents say police have to make tough decisions in seconds. There have been demonstrations of people waving American flags to support the police officers. 29-year-old Chris Black says he's an Iraq War veteran, and he wanted to come support the police.
I think the system needs to be given time for the proper channels and investigation to be done before we start screaming and yelling at people, saying, hey, we want answers. It's a process. Let's respect that process.
Others here disagree.
You know what? After watching the YouTube video, I think that it looks pretty bad. You know, it looks like the victim was actually saying, no, don't shoot me.
That's Martin Camacho. He's a resident of Pasco. Zambrano Montes was killed on a sidewalk near a large big box Mexican grocery store in the crowded afternoon. Kennewick police say about 40 witnesses have already come forward. They're looking for more who might have interacted with Zambrano Montes in the hours before the shooting. Hundreds have turned out to protest. They marched from a city park to the site of the shooting. There, on the sidewalk, tall Catholic candles are arranged into the sign of a cross. Large rocks with Sharpie inscriptions to the Zambrano Montes families are there, too. The solemn-mouthed crowd prayed, chanted, and sang songs.
En ese monte ya no hay.
Shortly after the protests began, some Pasco residents like business leader Felix Vargas began calling for a federal investigation into the shooting. He doesn't think that the neighboring town of Kennewick's police force can fully disclose the truth.
In short, what we want is a full set of eyes at the state, national level to be done. So really, the eyes of the world are upon Pasco. We have an opportunity here to do something which is credible.
Some national media are comparing this shooting to what happened in Ferguson, Missouri. Vargas says there are some similarities, but also some key differences.
Ferguson, arguably, was a much more complicated matter, and it really called into question what the police did and how they did it. In the case of Mr. Zambrano, we have a man who actually was running away, wanted to disengage, wanted to de-escalate the conflict. There is room for improvement.
Others here, like Latricia Brooks, say they don't feel heavy racism in Pasco, that they don't fear the police. Brooks says she's more upset about where and when this latest shooting happened.
As I watched the video, because I wasn't there, I just thought it was very dangerous and reckless because of the fact that there could have been children in the stores or somewhere nearby. Bullets just don't go straight. They bounce off of things.
As to why Zambrano Montes was throwing rocks, his cousin Maria Madrigal says he wasn't well lately. He had injured his hands. His wife had divorced him, taken their daughters to California.
He wouldn't have conversations with me like he used to. Normally, me and him would joke around. We'd talk smack to each other sometimes, but playing around. This time I was cutting his hair, try to have a conversation, he would cut it short.
A number of questions about the shooting remain. Did Zambrano Montes have a rock in his hand when he was shot? What caused him to throw rocks in the first place? How many bullets hit him? Was he on drugs or alcohol? Were the police officers calling out to him in English or Spanish? Kennewick investigators say they're still looking for those answers. Meanwhile, the Zambrano Montes family is preparing a $25 million lawsuit against the city of Pasco. The family has also called for a second autopsy. The FBI is monitoring the Kennewick Police Department's investigation into the shooting, and small groups are still turning out every day at City Hall to protest the death of Zambrano Montes. I'm Anna King in Pasco, Washington.
This latest police shooting has shown a spotlight on Pasco and its Black, white, and Latino residents. Anna King recorded some of their voices.
I think people are frustrated, and I think it's more so due to the fact that there has been a lot of violence lately and not just one incident. I think it has a lot to do with all the shootings that have happened a couple of months ago and also just things that have been happening nationally and not just here in our city. My name is Latricia Brooks, and we're in Pasco. Welcome to my town. I just thought it was very dangerous and reckless because of the fact that there could have been children in the stores or somewhere nearby. Bullets just don't go straight. They bounce off of things. They might have been, trying to apprehend somebody who was throwing rocks, but there was also a bunch of onlookers who could have gotten hurt too.
It's upset. We have kids. We want them nice to live in peace, everybody. And we're just... I just don't feel comfortable to go to the stores. Not even driving or something. It's so scared. It is.
Every city has violence and whatever, but we just want, since I grew up here and I live in Pasco and my kids go to school in Pasco, and I want them to know that, and look up to police officers and know that they're there to help them, not hurt people. They're there to help. My name is Amy Davis.
My name is Chris Black, and we're here to show the local law enforcement that they still have people in the community who support them. And we're from Pasco.
And we're from Pasco. Welcome to our community. When something like this happens, that's when I think people automatically think, oh, it's just because of person's nationality or race or anything like that, but it's not. We're all just human beings, and that's it. You're going to get racism everywhere you go. Not about race or color or anything like that. We're a community. We're all together as one.
I've had a lot of experiences with the Pasco police, and I think they try to do their job. My name is Martin Camacho, and welcome to my town. Welcome to Pasco, Washington, everybody. For one, I don't think that that was a prejudice thing, that to say that the officers did this out of prejudice or racism. I think that it was more a psychological thing. I think that it was more the heat of the moment, if you would say. You know, when you see something like this that's never been seen before in the history of Pasco, Washington, or Tri-Cities, when you see this here, it makes people say, what's wrong?
A federal judge has hit the pause button on President Obama's executive actions on immigration. The programs would give temporary legal status to millions of undocumented immigrants, including about 100,000 people in Washington state. The Obama administration has vowed to fight the challenges in court and in Congress. Liz Jones talked to two Seattle kids who are eager for this limbo to end. They're best friends who learned at a young age about terms like deportation and immigration status and why some secrets are important to keep.
A black dog named Princess tears across the front yard. Two boys are playing Toro with her. They hold up some cardboard, like a red cape, and Princess charges toward it. These bullfighters are Ronan and Jorge. They met a few years ago when Jorge's family moved in across the street from Ronan.
I remember that like one day, like for weeks, my mom had been saying, come on, let's just go see what he's like. And then one day we went over and that's when we became friends.
I kind of remember that he came to my house and I think I was hiding behind my dad because I think I was kind of nervous.
The dog tag.
Now these two boys are best friends despite their age difference. Ronan is 9 and Jorge is 13.
First time for a lot of us, yeah.
Ronan's mom and Jorge's parents chat on the sidewalk. They've come to view these two boys like brothers. They go on family outings together, and the boys are in and out of each other's homes constantly.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You guys want to drink?
Later, at Ronan's house, his mom fixes a snack. We settle in at the table, Ronan's mom, the two boys, and me. We make a little small talk.
So, Ronan, do you speak any Spanish at all?
Hola.
The boys are giggly, but the mood soon shifts as I ask about the conversation here at this table 3 years ago. Jorge had stayed over for dinner, then ended up sharing a secret about his family's immigration status. Jorge is not his real name, by the way.
What I remember...
This is Ronan's mom, Kristen Joy.
...was you were talking about when your grandmother died?
Mm-hmm. She passed, and then I saw my mom crying.
And you said that your family wasn't able to go back to Mexico?
Yeah.
Before she died, and you said because we don't have papers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's what I remember was the first time that you said that to us out loud. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I just remember him saying that he didn't have papers and that we couldn't tell anybody.
The weight of Jorge's secret landed on them all. His family had illegally crossed the border from Mexico about 10 years ago. Jorge's younger sister was born here, so she's a U.S. citizen. But the rest of the family, they don't have permission to be here. It was a big deal, and Kristen wanted these kids to grasp that.
And that there were, there was danger and there were consequences if we all didn't keep this secret.
Consequences like Jorge's parents could lose their jobs or the family could be deported. That was a tough concept for Ronan, who was 6 at the time. But he's a few years older now, and the idea of undocumented has gotten a bit clearer.
It means that they don't have papers or they don't think they have a passport, so they can't go outside their country.
And over the years, Jorge's come to a pretty good idea of what it'd feel like to be on the other side of that.
Relief, so I don't have to keep it secret anymore. And then I'll feel happy as well, because then I could travel with my family.
Before that night, Kristen viewed Jorge's immigration status as none of her business, but she had suspected the truth. She turns to him and explains why.
You used to have a lot of fear whenever a police car would go by or you'd hear sirens.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of one tip for me.
Jorge nods at her. He remembers that fear. I ask Ronan what he thinks it means for his friend's life to be undocumented.
They're probably really nervous all the time because someone could just come by and then tell him to go back to Mexico. But his sister might have to stay here.
Across the table, Jorge is fidgeting with a cloth napkin. As we've talked, he's growing quieter. He says he wants to have this conversation because he wants people to understand what it's like for him, even though it's a reality he tries to ignore.
I'm not usually think about it, so now I remember. So now it makes me sad.
He chokes up. His hands keep twisting away at the napkin.
I'm sorry, sweetie. We can take a break.
Okay.
Kristen gets emotional, too.
It makes all of us sad.
Should I break out the cookies? Yeah, okay.
Kristen brings out some cookies, and Ronan starts clowning around. In a moment, all is back to normal, and the kids lead me out to their treehouse.
Yeah, Ronan, so together you guys have 15 minutes, okay? 15 minutes of playtime.
The situation could change soon for Jorge's family. They're among the 4 million or so immigrants eligible for a program President Obama announced in November. It would give parents of U.S.-born children temporary permission to stay here. The program was due to start in May, but it currently faces a multi-state federal lawsuit. Those states argue the program would encourage more unauthorized immigration and strain public services like health clinics and schools.
Which ones? This one?
Outside in the yard, Jorge points toward a hammock.
The hammock.
It's the scene of a legendary accident.
But I was like closest to this side.
And then we swung too fast and too hard that the hammock fell and the stick popped out.
Ronan banged his face on the hammock pole. His chin was a bloody mess.
There's a lot of blood on the teeth.
While Ronan screamed, Jorge stayed at his side.
He started crying and then I was holding him, his hand, so he wouldn't be scared.
They helped each other through that terrible moment. And the small scar on Ronan's face will always mark that time, that childhood memory, and the friendship between these two boys. I'm Liz Jones reporting.
You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio, 91.9 KMUN Astoria and 89.5 KTCB Tillamook. I'm Kathleen Morgane. Still ahead, what if you had even a few seconds of warning to take cover before an earthquake?
Earthquake. Moderate shaking expected in 19 seconds.
Amy Radel reports on how even a moment's warning could save lives. That story coming up right after this weather break. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region. Cloudy today, a chance of showers this morning, and rain this afternoon. Highs around 50 degrees with west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 90%. Rainfall amounts around a tenth of an inch. Tonight, more rain with overnight lows around 45. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management, says the next system will develop today and move down the coast this evening, likely bringing rain to the area into tomorrow before moving off to the southwest tomorrow night into Saturday. High pressure builds in once again Saturday, bringing in more sun along with cooler temperatures, especially at night. Next week, we'll start with more clouds along with a chance of rain. Highs stay in the low 50s with lows in the mid 40s, dropping to around 40 by tomorrow and into the upper 30s over the weekend before inching up to near 40 again by the middle of next week. Early warnings for earthquakes already occur in Japan, and they're being piloted in California. Now the University of Washington hopes to bring them to the Northwest. Business officials and emergency managers in Seattle recently met with scientists to hear how the warnings could be used to slow trains, halt factories, or stop surgeries in the moments before a quake. Amy Radel reports.
Earthquake. Moderate shaking expected in 19 seconds.
The amount of advance notice you can get of an earthquake depends on its size and your distance from it. If Seattle had had an early warning system for earthquakes in 2001, residents would have had about 14 seconds before they felt the Nisqually quake. For some, you'd get even more notice. In that situation, your impulse might be to run outside. Turns out that's what you're not supposed to do.
In fact, a seismologist down the hall here almost got
clocked by a piece of the building in the Nisqually earthquake.
That's John Vidali, the director of the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network. He says he'd stay put until the shaking was over.
I'd mainly just look around and make sure I was aware of what was coming in my direction, as opposed to being hit in the back of the head by that piece of lava up there on the bookshelf.
When an earthquake starts, the initial waves can't be felt by people, but they're captured by sensors all over the Northwest. And there's new software to deliver these warnings to desktop computers. Vidali is offering the software to emergency managers in government and business. But he says right now the system isn't reliable enough for widespread use.
Yeah, there are a number of problems if we make mistakes. And one problem is we undermine our credibility and future warnings aren't taken as seriously.
Vidali says it would cost $16 million in federal funding per year to maintain a reliable West Coast network. Gary Gordon works in emergency management for the Boeing company. He's impressed with the use of earthquake warnings in Japan and says there could definitely be applications for the system at Boeing.
Items where you have people working in very small confined spaces, where you need to get them out of those confined spaces or out of subsurface areas. These are all great candidates for this type of an early warning system.
Gordon says those warnings could be integrated so that they automatically halt the manufacturing process to save valuable seconds. He says this round of testing will provide a more definitive timeline for using those warnings. I'm Amy Radel reporting.
Retirement and estate planning is often something that people just put off. It can be difficult to face end-of-life issues. Some worry that a formal plan can be time-consuming and expensive. Tonight in Astoria, you can take the first step in making your own retirement plan. Thrivent Financial and Grace Episcopal Church are joining together to make a free presentation called How to Retire Wisely So You Can Leave a Legacy and Give Back to Your Community. And with me in the studio are Linda Moreland, CPA and Financial Associate at Thrivent, and Jeremy Rust, a real estate attorney with Moberg and Rust in Seaside. Linda, why should we start preparing for retirement now?
Well, thanks, Kathleen. That's a great question because it requires planning. You know, if you want your retirement to be as great as the rest of your life, you need to give it a little thought and a little time and work with a CPA, an attorney, and a financial planner so that you can have the best plan possible.
And Mr. Rust, what holds people off from making retirement plans?
I think most people are afraid to come in and face the certainty of death and planning that is required. The best time to come in really is as soon as you have any major life events like having a child, marriage, and then we recommend coming in every 2 years after that to update your plan just to let us know what's going on in your life.
Tonight's program is primarily aimed at boomers.
Yeah, baby boomers, and it's really the perfect time to begin planning. If you're within 5 years of retirement, say, that you really need that lead time to get your plan in order, to really be prepared. There's a lot of decisions to make preparing for retirement, and we can help you, make that a good transition for you as well.
Different people might have different planning needs for property or medical directives, but really, we do all need to do this.
Absolutely. I think it's important. There's several options from whether you have a will, a trust, there's charitable giving options. The thing most people don't know about and are not aware of is that there's severe tax consequences and potentially losing a majority of your estate to the government if you are not pre-planning. And I think that that's what both Linda and I are here to help people with, setting up other options such as life insurance and other non-taxable events that can occur at the end of life and still support the family and leave a legacy for your favorite charity and still meet those needs of the public.
And Linda, who are you hoping will come to tonight's presentations, and who is this targeted to?
The people that we're hoping will come to this are people that have some assets that they need help with. We can also help people with things like Social Security claiming strategy, which is a foundation of most people's retirement strategy. So we help people with that. really our specialty at ThriveEnd is helping people with retirement distribution strategies, figuring out how to take your hard-earned IRA and 401k assets and turn it into income streams that you're not going to outlive that will last your whole lifetime.
From my perspective, I think we're looking for anybody that either has not done any estate planning at this point in time or hasn't looked at their estate plan in a few years. They need the opportunity, as Linda said, to build upon what they have and to pre-plan for what's going to happen at the end of life.
And what will people take away from the workshop?
I think they'll take away some really good information, a couple of things that they can act on immediately, and then, of course, the opportunity to meet one-on-one with Jeremy or myself to really do some more in-depth planning. So there'll be some immediate benefits and information provided tonight at the seminar. We have one at 4 o'clock and one at 6 o'clock. We would appreciate it if you could RSVP so we can make sure we have enough chairs and cookies and coffee for everyone. But we will be giving two different presentations to accommodate people's schedules. So we're looking forward to seeing you here tonight.
For that RSVP, can you do that by telephone?
Yes, you can call me directly at 503-780-8704. Or you can also reach me by email at linda.moreland@thriveent.com.
And the location tonight?
The location is going to be at Grace Episcopal Church. We want to thank them so much for generously donating the space. And the address is 1545 Franklin Avenue in Astoria.
We look forward to seeing you this evening.
That was Linda Moreland of Thrivent Financial and attorney Jeremy Rust. They are making two presentations tonight in Astoria on personal retirement and estate planning, 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. at Grace Episcopal Church. The presentations are free of charge. And that's all the time we have for today's show. The Bridge airs weekly Thursday mornings at 9. If you joined us late, you can listen to a podcast from our website at coastradio.org. Just click the program box on the homepage. We welcome your comments. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1, that's N-E-W-S, then the numeral 1, at KMUN.org. I'm Kathleen Morgain saying thank you for listening today, and listen in again next Thursday for the next edition of The Bridge. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.